appreciate what they're doing, sort of getting together a group of experts to share some thoughts on a lot of different things. And for me today, it's really focusing on momentum investing. What I hope to do with our time today is sort of introduce this topic. And I think, most of you, if not many of you, are probably very familiar with momentum investing, even if that's not what you call it. Essentially, it's trend following, or identifying trend patterns and trying to quantify those. And what I'll demonstrate, obviously using stock charts, is how I use different methods to try to capture momentum, particularly what we call the Scooter Rankings, the Stock Charts Technical Rating, or SCTR. And this is a proprietary trend following system that we designed years ago. And it is a very simplistic way of measuring trend. And it's not secretive. You can actually find it on our website. We'll share with you the formula that we use and how we kind of put it together. But basically allows you to rank stocks based on their trend characteristics, also ETFs and industry groups and other things. And I found it to be an invaluable resource to try to make sense of the world, especially now when it feels like investing is such a macro call. It's like everything's either going up or everything's going down at times. In the last couple of days, it's been a little bit different. You've seen, sort of the late cyclicals like energy, industrials, materials sort of rallying, and technology, communication services down at the bottom. Then yesterday, you have a big mean reversion where tech's back at the top. But I think looking at price momentum is the most beneficial way that you can try to make sense of that and understand what's working and what's not. Standard disclaimer, please don't do anything with anything I'm about to show you. Talk about just my career history very briefly, and I don't want to belabor it, but I was hiring at Fidelity when I was there years ago, and one of our graphic designer interviewees, his resume was a chart. So everyone had these text-based resumes, and this guy had the audacity to put just a big chart of the S&P 500 and then bullet points along the way highlighting his career history, and I thought that was just ingenious, and we ended up hiring him. He was a fantastic designer, but I loved how he visualized that. So since then, I've been showing my career history overlaid on the S&P 500, just with logos of where I've worked. So just so you know where I'm coming from perspective-wise, I've been in the financial industry for about 20 years now, and I started at Bloomberg in New York. Back here, when the tech bubble was really heating up, I was studying music and psychology at The Ohio State University. And then I went through the very logical next step of leaving that and going into finance. And to be honest, I was looking for some money because I was sick of the great income and then the minimal income. It was a high volatility income situation as a working musician. And I was very happy to have some stability, and I just have forgotten to go back. I've just stayed with the financial industry since then. So I was in New York here from 2000 to 2008 at Bloomberg, and essentially traveled around North and South America visiting institutional investors and trying to help them use charts to make better decisions. And had an opportunity to meet some really knowledgeable investors, successful investors, guys like Steve Cohen and others, and many others that you probably have not heard of that were just exceptionally talented. And it was a real blessing to be able to do that. In 2008, I moved up to Fidelity in Boston, and I was hired to run their technical research team. So I spent about 8.5 years there, and we would advise all the equity portfolio managers on buy and sell decisions using pure technical strategies. So we had a fundamental research team that would know the companies and know the stories. We had a quantitative research team that would run alpha models and risk models. And then my team was looking at price behavior and trying to understand investor sentiment, investor psychology using the charts. And so it was sort of the three pieces of the puzzle for the portfolio managers there. Along the way, I was the president of the CMT Association from 2010 to 2014, which is a global organization. They provide the CMT exam, which is a designation that I have and many of my peers as well. And then after that, I left Fidelity in 2016. I launched my own firm called Sierra Alpha Research. And I'll share with you a little later in the presentation why I called it Sierra Alpha, but basically worked with institutional investors and more with financial advisors. And that's where I really ended up focusing my business, which was empowering financial advisors to make better decisions and ramp up their investment process, try to put more discipline, more structure behind their investment decisions using the power of technical analysis and behavioral finance. And then about a year ago, just over a year ago, relocated to the Pacific Northwest or outside of Redmond, Washington, and I joined StockCharts.com as their chief market strategist. And that's where I'm at today. And it's a lot of fun. StockCharts is a really driven off of empowering investors, active investors, to understand the markets better. And so it's through education, through the tools, the technical toolkit, and with commentary, expert commentary for myself and people like John Murphy and Martin Pring, Arthur Hill, Greg Schnell, Tom Boley, a really fantastic group of contributors that provide some actionable ideas all during the trading day. So, the reason why I show this graphically, to be totally honest with you, is to share with you when the market is doing what it's doing now, which is rallying to all-time highs. This is not quite updated. The S&P is up, a appear it's chopped around a little bit since the screenshot. When the S&P is testing all-time highs, I go back, of course, to where I learned technical analysis, which was starting in 2000. And really the 2000s were when I learned it. And what I learned is when the market gets to, you know, extreme highs, I felt the euphoria of the tech bubble. And I was learned technical analysis as the tech bubble was unwinding. And you had 9/11 and some, you know, challenging periods around that time for sure. But, you know, it was basically the unwinding of a euphoric period. And you saw a similar thing in 2007 with the financial crisis, sort of the euphoria in housing prices and other things, sort of unwinding. And so I tend to get very skeptical when the market is teasing all-time highs, which has served me very well in 2007. It did not serve me well in 2013 when I turned very negative and I felt like a rock star genius when the S&P was retesting the previous highs just to see it continue on. So you will find me at a moment like this when the market's testing 3,600. I will be incredibly skeptical and I'll share with you things I'm seeing that tell me there could be some chinks in the armor. And hopefully what I hope it does, for you thinking about your own process is to follow the trends, but to always be anticipating potential turning points, have your risk measures in place. So, you know, when I think about investing, I'll share just a little bit about my investment philosophy from what I've learned over time. And, you know, I would say humans are emotional beings and that is the truth. If you think about your investment decisions, those are just one sets of decisions that you make every day. And they are, you know, pretty minor decisions like what am I going to have for breakfast? What show am I going to watch? Those kind of things, but also significant decisions like who am I going to be in a relationship with? Are we going to have children? Where are we going to live? Am I going to change my jobs? I mean, these are all big life-changing or life-altering decisions. And so they are all decisions though. And in some ways, humans are wired to handle those decisions emotionally. Now, if you study finance at an MBA or something, they will insist that humans are rational and that we look at all available information and make a 100% rational decision based on all available data. And I think if you've traded for more than half a second, you know that is not how the markets tend to work, right? The market overshoots and undershoots where it probably should be. Traders get nervous, they get excited, they get desperate, they get euphoric, they get despondent, and all of those adjectives describe an emotional reaction to expectations. And we're seeing that now more than ever. If you look at the S&P futures around the during election night, if you look at the overnight future and you see what the futures did when it appeared that Trump may win at 10 p.m. Eastern, and then at 2 p.m. Eastern when it started to feel like it was going to be of a longer stretch, you saw the futures react to that. That is not a rational reaction to all available information. It's an emotional reaction based on expectations and how those are fluctuating very, very quickly. So I was taught that the markets were driven by fear and greed. And I've learned over my career, I think it's evolved, or maybe my thinking has evolved to consider it being driven 100% by fear. I think people are anxious. I think the overall anxiety level is elevated right now. And I think on the downside, it's fear of losing everything. On the upside, it's fear of missing out, FOMO. And I think that's what's driving it. And what that means is, in general, increased volatility. That should mean increased opportunity if you're using charts, because charts are driven by volatility. They're driven by emotional reactions. And that's what we are trying to capture as a trend follower, as a momentum investor. So what is the idea with trend following? Well, I would say this, the general idea of trend following, we talk about that or momentum investing. I think you have three things you're trying to do. Number one, identify trends, right? Figure out what's working and figure out what's not working. Number two is follow those trends. So find ways to lean into what's working and lean away from what's not working. And then step three is to anticipate when those trends may be reversing and try to look for signals, indications, divergences, some sort of color that might indicate that things are not as perfect as they might see looking at the price. And I think those are really the three questions you're trying to answer. You know, where is the trend? How can I lean into that trend? And how can I anticipate when the trend may be reversing? And the goal of that, looking at a chart of Apple in the year 2019, if you think about what happened with the stock going from, and again, this is split adjusted, but once you adjust for the recent split, it's 140 up to 300. It's a double plus over a 12-month period, outperformed the S&P by about 58% over that year. If you think about it, the conventional wisdom is buy low and sell high. You want to be buying at the very low point and be selling at the very high point. But what trend following tells you is the idea is actually buy high and sell higher, right? You're buying strength because you know that leading stocks tend to outperform. And, it's a little different. And depending on your time frame, if you can think a little more long term, a couple months plus, the data will show you that trend following is a much better practice than mean reversion. Mean reversion works on really short time frames. If you're trying to pick the turns over the next couple hours, I would be buying weakness and selling strength. If I'm trying to invest in stocks, sorry about that, for the next, you know, next couple months, the next year, I would be looking to buy strength and looking to sell weakness, lean into what's working and lean away from what's not working. That's what allows you to buy Apple in September of 2019 when it's breaking to new highs. And you think of the new highs list potentially as, uh-oh, these are overheated. That's not the case, right? Things that are working tend to continue to work. And that's what the momentum factor that most institutions use in a quantitative model, that is 100% what that is driven off of. Now, how do we come up with trend following? Why is that a thing? Well, it starts really from this gentleman, Charles Dow, and over 100 plus years ago, early 1900s, Charles Dow was, basically had a bunch of writings, which are fantastic to review, by the way, if you can get your hands on them. But his original essays were all about trends. And he made, you know, a lot of conclusions looking at stock prices that we still use every day today. Things like, you know, the idea of indexing, the idea of having an index of stocks and using that as a way to quantify what the market, quote unquote, overall was doing. That was Charles Dow, thinking of the, you know, Dow Industrials and the Dow Railroads, and looking at different parts of the economy, the producers of goods and the distributors of goods, and seeing if they are both doing well. That tells you that the market overall is doing well. We call that Dow theory, which is something that we still use today. But one of his key contributions is defining what a trend was. And for Charles Dow, an uptrend was a series of higher highs and higher lows. A downtrend is a series of lower lows and lower highs. And if you want to understand what price is doing, you take a step back and you look at the high prices, meaning the peaks on the chart as you look back, and you look at the low prices, the lows, the valleys on the chart as you go back. And a stock is in an uptrend by definition if you see higher highs and higher lows. It's in the downtrend if you see lower lows and lower highs. And when I taught technical analysis at Brandeis University to master's students, and it was a lot of fun, to be honest, getting master's students in the second year of their master's program, trying to unwind things like the efficient markets hypothesis and modern portfolio theory and things that they learned in some of their other courses, and focusing on price behavior and investor psychology. But what we talked about was basically the very first thing you need to do when you're looking at a chart is to define the trend. Is this price in an uptrend or a downtrend? And until you've done that, you have not earned the right to say anything more about the price or your expectations or whatever. And in the end, we built a technical checklist based on starting with price trend and going through a number of other items, but it was a systematic way of defining the trend and trying to anticipate it. So, you know, Charles Dow, again, his work was done many years ago, and obviously, but what's interesting is the concepts that he focused on are still very relevant today. Even though the market participants are certainly very different. Price transparency is different. The growth in quantitative investing, computerization, decimalization, these have all changed things, but investors still get excited. They get nervous. They panic. They are euphoric. That is still prevalent on price behavior. And if you don't think that's true, just look at the markets over the last week and a half, you know, related to the election. Those are emotional reactions to what's been going on, I would argue. So, well, a couple other comments here on trend following, and then we're going to get particular to some examples, and then we're going to finish off looking at some live market information. I'll switch to stock charts and show you how we use a model to try to quantify price behavior, quantify momentum. You know, when you think about it, the market works on different time frames, and I hinted earlier about mean reversion versus trend following, and I'll tell you that depending on your time frame, equities behave in different ways. This is a crudely drawn illustration of an idealized cycle. And figure the orange line is your sort of ideal cycle. You'd want to buy stocks when they're maybe rotating out of a low and starting to improve. You like riding an uptrend higher when things start to get overheated. Maybe you take profits and maybe you exit when things start to roll over a little bit. And ideally, that's sort of the time frame that you're on. What you have to remember is if that is your time frame, that's a couple months or whatever it is that you're trying, a couple days, whatever your specific horizon is, you have to remember that that time frame is comprised of a smaller group of waves, right? And Elliott Wave, Robert Prechter, and Frost and others have written much more than I can tell you about weight price behavior and how it moves in waves, and really the fractal nature of prices, how in shorter or longer term time frames, you still get very similar patterns. So I'd point you to Bob Prechter's writings on that if you're not familiar with this. But, you know, the orange cycle is also comprised of a shorter term cycle where the market moves in fits and starts and essentially overshoots and undershoots this cycle based on the short term price fluctuations. But that orange cycle also is part of a much broader cycle, this black line, which is very slowly, sluggishly kind of improving over that time. And you can see that my orange cycle is part of a much larger thing, and we're overshooting and undershooting that. So this relationship between mean reversion and trend following is very common. The way that I would show you that in concrete terms is the way that I think of different time frames. And I would encourage you, depending on what time frame you are operating on, make sure your technical toolkit is really geared for that. If you're what I would, and again, these phrases or this terminology is sort of my own, and it is very loose, but this is how how I tend to think of things. For me, short term is a couple days to a couple weeks. If you're trading, you know, if you're day trading, if you're trading a couple minutes at a time, I put that, this is another orange box over here called like ultra short term or something that I don't really get into. I think more in these time frames. So short term for me is a couple days to a couple weeks. Medium term is a couple months to a couple years. Long term is much further than that, like in a retirement account or something like that. So if you're looking at that short term time frame, sort of the swing trading time frame of a couple days to a couple weeks, in general, all else being equal, you should be betting on mean reversion, meaning you're best off by buying weakness and selling strength. Because on that time frame, it's all about sort of the mean reversion. It's all about the fluctuation, the short-term waves that make up the price movements over time. The medium-term time frame, which I would argue is sort of the sweet spot for, you know, long-term investing, is looking at a couple months to a couple years. And you should be trend following, meaning if you look at the data in general, you're better off buying things that are working and betting on that trend to continue. You're better off underweighting or selling out of things that are not working because they tend to continue to not work over that time frame. So these short-term fluctuations build up into longer-term trends that are actually definitive trends that go. And so if you think about it, if you've ever talked to someone or if you worked with at any sort of financial institution, any big buy-side firm has a quantitative research team, and they are most likely running some models driven by, in some particular way, price momentum. And they usually define that as 12-month returns or 6-month returns or 12-month returns minus 1-month return or something like that. And what that means is the strongest trend over the last 12 months, the highest trend, the best performer gets the highest rating in that system. And the lowest performer gets the worst rating in that system. And in general, you want to be owning stocks more at the higher end of that list. And so that's how institutions are placing their bets, is betting on this price momentum. If you read anything, or if you Google the momentum factor and you see what academics have written about momentum, this is sort of what they're trying to do, or combining these first two timeframes. In the much longer term, you're getting more into the mean reversion of the business cycle. This is things like sectors and themes coming in and out of play over multiple years, and markets get back into a much more of a cyclical relationship. So I would argue at that point, technical analysis is much less effective or valuable. I would say charting and being able to visualize the long-term trends in interest rates or real estate prices is absolutely valuable. So don't get me wrong, I think you still can visualize things over a longer period of time. But in terms of actionable trading signals, the shorter term that you get, the less effective fundamental analysis can be, because there's just not a lot of news to drive things moment to moment. And it's more about the behavior of the investors that comprise the financial markets and how they're trading. So having said that, what is the benefit? How do we actually use technical analysis? And again, I would encourage you, I hope what you're able to take away from this first part of the discussion is, think about with your own process, you're probably doing one or two of these pretty well, and probably one or two of these you have not thought of as much about. And I'd encourage you to spend some time sort of reflecting on that. Three benefits of technical analysis from my experience. Number one is probably the most obvious one: idea generation. This is what people think a lot of, which is, you know, I'm going to find the next Peloton or Zoom or Crocs or Starbucks or whatever it is before it just rips to the upside. I want to understand, you know, identify those stocks before they break out. And that is a totally legitimate way of thinking about technical analysis. For something like D.R. Horton, you know, looking here in August of 2019, as it's breaking to new highs, as it's starting to outperform, breaking to a new relative high for the last 12 months, it was a pretty good opportunity to lean into home builders and ride this price behavior higher over the next couple months. And that for me is sort of the game that I'm trying to play. If you think about it though, you know, those first two time frames, think of the short term time frame and the medium term. The medium term time frame says the last year has been pretty strong. The short term time frame says I want to buy mean reversion though. I want to buy weaker 1 month returns. And this chart of D.R. Horton in December of last year may be sort of the idealized chart, which is something like a long uptrend, and it's pulled back a little bit. So a strong 1 year and a weak 1 month. So it's pulled back here to the 52 level after a nice uptrend. So overall, the trend is still positive. Overall, it's been outperforming, but it's pulling back a little bit, which means I could probably get in at a better price on the lower end of this channel and ride the next wave higher. And that's how a lot of institutions try to generate ideas, for sure. It, you know, coincidentally, we'll look, if I can remember, I'll jot down a note to look later at Peloton and Zoom I mentioned earlier, arguably look a lot like D.R. Horton did at the end of last year. We'll look at those in a minute. Second benefit, first is idea generation. The second one's risk management. And this is one I would argue technical analysis is incredibly good. There are a lot of places you can read articles, you can look at the newspaper, Barron's, whatever it is, you will find plenty of opportunities, people pitching some stock that you look at and you think it's a good opportunity. So I doubt you are looking for new buy ideas, because you probably have a lot of them. But managing your risk, managing the downside risk in your portfolio, getting out of things when they're not working, I would argue is probably one of the even more valuable benefits of technical analysis. Because what happens is when price turns lower, the fundamental story still a lot of times tends to be pretty positive. The reasons why the price goes down tend to become much more obvious in the rearview mirror. Down the road, you can look back and say, okay, that's why Advance Auto Parts went from 200 down to 80 over a two-year period. But as it's happening, a lot of times the reasoning, the justification for why the price is going down is less obvious, but the price going down is incredibly obvious. And there are lines in the sand that I always encourage people to draw that say, if the price gets below X, I don't care how I feel about the stock, the idea, the thesis, the upside potential, if it breaks that level, I want to get out. And that disciplined, emotionless way of defining your downside risk is a really good idea, especially in an environment like now when so many stocks are at or near new highs. Now is the time to be thinking about your risk assessment. So with Advance Auto Parts, if you look at the left half of this chart, a multi-year uptrend of just strong price performance, strong relative performance. This is Advance Auto Parts relative to the S&P 500. So this line going up means it's outperforming, but something very different happened here in the fourth quarter of 2015. You can see how everything started to roll over. Price no longer making higher highs, it's making a lower high. Price is no longer outperforming, it's starting to underperform. And then somewhere along the way, maybe it's when it broke down through its 200-day moving average, maybe when the 50 and 200-day moving average crossed, maybe when it started making a lower high, maybe when it started breaking down to a new swing low, somewhere, some combination of those technical factors, the relative strength going down, should have told you that it's no longer a great idea to be owning Advance Auto Parts at that point. And so I think one of the great benefits of technical analysis of charting is to identify your risk, to use stops, trailing stops, just support and resistance levels to validate or to confirm where you will agree to change your positioning, change your thesis, and have an awareness of that. So I think risk management is really key. And as I hinted at earlier, there's an appropriate time and a less appropriate time to think about risk management. This is, I was doing a flight. I'm a student pilot and I was flying around New England the one years ago and took this picture off the right wingtip. This is Providence, Rhode Island here. This is Providence Harbor. And I had this great view of the city off to the right as I was going back to my home airport near Boston. And I knew though, as I was enjoying the view off my left wingtip was this airport right here. This little X is called North Central Airport. It's northwest of downtown Providence. And I knew, given my altitude, given the wind speed, I knew if something would happen right at that moment, I knew I could safely get down to that airport, how the wind was coming, where I would need to land, what frequency I would need to use. I kind of had it all laid out. So when things were great, when we're flying straight and level, there are no known issues, that is when you set your emergency plan. It's not when the engine cuts out. That's not when you start thinking, all right, what should I do in the case of an engine out? Like, I already have that laid out ahead of time. So if something would happen, hopefully it doesn't, but if it does, you can click into your emergency plan. So now when your portfolio may be looking pretty good is the time to be thinking about potential risk triggers and what you would need to do. And then the third benefit of technical analysis, I would argue, is what I call situational awareness. And I mentioned earlier, my firm's called Sierra Alpha Research, S-A for Sierra Alpha. That's slang for situational awareness. And that's a pilot term basically suggesting that you need to have an awareness of where you're at. What is happening around you, inside the cockpit, outside of the cockpit? Because most airplane accidents, especially with private pilots, are due to human error. It's not something wrong with the plane. It's not some system going wrong. It's the human, it's the pilot making a poor decision. And so you study a lot of decision making and focusing on how to minimize the chances of a poor decision happening. One of the ways you can do that is by having a good awareness of what's going on around you. So this is the instrument panel on the Cessna that I was flying. And you had to use that to understand the conditions of the airplane, but also don't forget to look outside the dashboard and see what's happening around you. And I think as investors, you need to take the blinders off and focus on, have a good process, a good routine for understanding what's happening around you as an investor. Now, the point of that situational awareness is a lot of times I think people love to oversimplify. There's this thing called narrative bias, where you develop a narrative. Biden is, and again, I'm making up a narrative here, but it's a common one now, right? Biden is winning or is going to win, however you think about it, which means this, given a Biden presidency and a mixed Congress, which looks most probable, here's what he is most likely to do going into 2021. Here's what it should mean. Here's what should work. Here's what should not. Infrastructure stocks should work. Technology should do X. And you start, sort of giving this whole narrative. What you're doing is incredibly oversimplifying and thinking that, that one set of facts has this whole chain of results that aren't affected by all the other things going on. You also have interest rates. You have the shape of the yield curve. You also have commodity prices. You have inflation. You have geopolitical issues. You have coronavirus, right? I mean, all these things are also affecting investor behavior and affecting stock prices. So you can't oversimplify and say there's one thing and then draw conclusions. So I think a lot of times investors, they get into should investing, right? The market, something's going to happen, which means this sector or this stock should do X, Y, Z. As an example of where you should not focus on what should happen, but what is happening, is 2014. If you look at 2009 to 2020, it was this just cyclical bull market, secular bull market, beautiful uptrend over time. 2014 is right in the middle of that stretch. And you can see that overall, the price was pretty strong, right? From start to end, the price finished higher than it started. Overall, it was a pretty solid trend. So my question is, what sector was the number one sector in the S&P in 2014? What was the best performer? Technology? No. Consumer discretionary? No. Healthcare? No. Industrials? No. Materials? No. Energy? No. It was utilities. Boring, not sexy, not offense, utilities. That was the number one sector in 2014. So if you had perfect foresight and you knew that the market was going to go high over the next 12 months, I would say you'd be hard pressed to say that utilities were going to be your number one bet for that next 12 months, because you'd be much more focused on something like tech or consumer or something like that that would most likely outperform. So the reason why I show you this is the market can do well, and things that might surprise you will actually do well or do poorly. And by focusing on the charts, not on what should happen, but what actually is happening, you're going to be in the right places. So regardless of what you think the market's going to do, if the chart of utilities is working and the price is strong, you're going to be in utilities, and then you're going to do pretty well regardless of what the market overall is trying to accomplish. That is my long-winded introduction justifying momentum investing. And at this point, I want to get to the core of the presentation, which is talking about what we call the scooter rankings, the stock charts technical ranking. I'm just going to introduce the topic very quickly, and then we're going to switch to some live charts, and I'll show you where, you know, how I use this day to day just to make sense of the markets. So, you know, if you think about a broad universe, so we'll start with large cap equities, right? You've got thousands of stocks, or, you know, many, many stocks that you could argue are in this bucket of large cap U.S. stocks. So the question is, how do you make sense of them? I think for equity investors especially, analyzing one particular chart in some ways is the easy part, right? It's relatively easy to learn a toolkit, to have a chart that you use to look at a series of indicators, series of prices, and identify where you want to buy it, where you'd want to take profits, where you'd want to cut your losses and analyze it. But I think the much more difficult, much more challenging and time intensive thing is figuring out what chart you should be looking at in the first place, right? If you spend all your time analyzing the chart, but you're not in the right chart at all, it's not super helpful, and certainly not going to improve your returns overall. So you need some way of making sense of the equity universe. And so what we've developed is what's called the scooter rankings, which is essentially a way of ranking a group of stocks, ETFs, industry groups, whatever, by their trend characteristics. And it's a percentile ranking, which means, and I took this as of yesterday's close, might have changed a bit, we'll look in a second, but as of yesterday's close, Gap GPS was the top ranked stock in our large cap universe. So it's a 99th percentile, strongest chart out of all of them, followed by L Brands, ALGN, Tesla, Car, FCX, FDX, and so forth. So this is a way of literally rank ordering in terms of their trend characteristics. And it has three different time frames. Starts with large long-term, which is about 60% of it. Medium terms, about 30%. Short terms, about 10%. And those terms are used loosely. Again, on our, I'll show you on our website, there's an article that explains the calculations so you can understand what's going in there. But it's using things like moving averages and RSI and PPO, which is sort of like the MACD indicator, a trend following indicator, series of those, combination of those things to quantify price strength and price weakness. So a couple ways that I think of this. Number one is, how can I focus on what's working and what's not working? Let me look at the strongest charts and the weakest charts and see what is happening. And again, use that to try to understand what's causing these stocks to be in certain characteristics. We can also look at changes in the scooter ranking. So part of my dashboard that I look at every day are stocks that are gaining the most in this scooter ranking and stocks that are losing the most in their scooter ranking. So what this means is, you know, if it's gone up 31, that means it's gone up 31 percentile, you know, ranks compared to all those other stocks. So out of all that universe, this one has gained the most. It's increased the most from yesterday's close in its scooter ranking, which means something has happened to improve. These are the stocks making big gaps. A lot of times in, you know, this time of the quarter, sort of earnings releases that are being reflected, big news events that will cause a stock to jump, obviously. Or, you know, to be honest with you, it's been, you know, on Monday, it was the big gap with all prices reacting to news over the weekend, the Biden victory, the Pfizer vaccine announcement, all of that causes a huge jump in prices. So a lot of big movers were as a result of that. You can also see, you know, what groups are struggling. So yesterday it was things like, you know, Macy's, Kohl's, Nordstrom. These are stocks that were struggling, and gapping down the most. So it's interesting to just see what's moving and start to reflect on what might be causing some of those movements. So having said that, we're going to a live market chart here. So we're looking at stockcharts.com, and I'll start to explain what these are telling you about the overall market here. So this is the live dashboard that I use, and essentially it's giving me the overview on the market, what's happening. We see the S&P is down about 0.33% to 3560 here, around midday. We can see the sector movements, and tech was number one. It's kind of coming off just a little bit. Then energy and financials, those groups that had done really well earlier in the week, continuing to weaken on a relative basis. But this is the section down here where I have the scooter rankings. And what I can show you here is we're looking at large caps. If I can do the same thing for the mid cap universe, for a small cap universe, we also have a whole ETF universe that we use, and US industries. And you can, again, look at and rank all of these tickers based on their trend characteristics. And if you look at non-US stocks, non-US markets, if you trade the Canadian markets, we do the Toronto Stock Exchange. We also do a universe for London and a universe for India. And it's all using the same methodology, just with a different universe of stocks. Then here I'm looking at the stocks that are gaining the most. And you can see actually while we're doing this, it refreshes pretty regularly, about once a minute, and switches with the stocks that are gaining the most. So Facebook is actually one that is gaining the most today on its scooter rankings. Biorad is the number one gainer, though, just testing that 600 level from below. So this is the way that we try to manage it. And so again, for me, as I'm starting and thinking, all right, what's happening today? What's actionable? What's moving? I will very first off, after looking at just the broad S&P and some other asset classes, see what's happening, look at sector returns, I'll immediately glance down here to the scooter rankings and see what's going up, what's going down, what are the top stocks, and has that changed at all, and try to understand some of the evolution of some of these patterns. The other thing we can do is look at a watch list. So down here, we have what are called chart lists, and I will show you this one here is just the sector ETFs. So this is very simplistic, looking at the 11 S&P sector ETFs. I have the sector, the S&P 500 here as well. And one of the things you can do is actually look at these, any list of tickers sorted on their scooter rankings. So we rank all the ETFs, which means we can look at the 11 S&P sector spider ETFs and just rank them on their scooter rankings. So what that means is I'm sorting the 11 sectors and the S&P itself by their stock charts technical rating. And I'm seeing which are the strongest, which are the weakest. Probably not a surprise if you look at what's strongest. It's actually not technology. Recently, it's industrials and materials. And if you think about why that might be, I'll show you this. If you look at the chart of, I'm jumping around here a little bit, but if you look at the chart of the XLK, this is the last 2 years on the XLK, you can see obviously on a price basis has appreciated a great deal. I would argue we're still in this consolidation pattern. You could, maybe call this a descending triangle, but regardless of what you call it, it's certainly a coil pattern, certainly a consolidation pattern. But the relative strength tells really the story. If you start at the December 18 market low and start the clock there, you can see this consistent stretch of outperformance by technology. But if you look at the last 6 to 8 weeks, the relative strength has certainly flattened, if not gone down. You see the series of lower highs in the relative strength. So while technology has been consolidating, you can know that you may know that other sectors like industrials have actually started to outperform. You can see the relative strength over the last couple months. And really since, mid-May, industrials has been a pretty strong outperformer over the long period. Materials is another one. That was number two. We can see the relative strength characteristics since the March low. Materials have actually been improving over that time frame. So what the scooter rankings kind of allow you to do is focus on, what sectors are working, what sectors are not working. So what's at the bottom of the scooter rankings, not surprisingly, energy, which on a relative basis has certainly been the weakest sector out of the 11 for an extended period of time. Real estate, number two from the bottom, healthcare, consumer staples, some of the more defensive part of the markets in the form of real estate and consumer staples for sure. So this is one way, and again, we're just using the 11 S&P sectors for simplicity, but if you want to take a group of tickers, maybe it's your universe, maybe it's your portfolio, maybe it's whatever it is, you can actually sort it based on those scooter rankings. So this is actually a dummy portfolio, a model portfolio, just using the Dow 30 stocks as your portfolio. And this is an example. Let's assume this is your this is your list of stocks. We're now sorting that portfolio based on the scooter rankings. So I can see, again, let's assume this is the group of 30 stocks that I own. I can see my strongest trends out of all the stocks that I'm in are Honeywell, Apple, and Caterpillar. And if you look at the charts, you'll see why their scooter rankings are so strong, right? So look at Honeywell. We can see, again, it's the 92nd, 93rd percentile out of the entire large cap universe. You can see that the price overall has made a pattern of higher highs and higher lows on pullbacks. The pullbacks seem to, keep finishing above the previous swing lows, we can see the relative strength has been strong really since the May low, but has really accelerated in the last couple of weeks or so, since mid to late October. So overall, the trend has been very, very strong. So it makes sense out of that list of Dow names, or my model portfolio, that's the top ranked trend. Apple is number two. Let's look at the trend here. So this one has certainly tapered off a little bit, and we can see this one's more of a consolidation pattern. The relative strength has flattened out a little bit, but still 88 percentile out of the entire large cap universe. You can sort it from the bottom, then you can see what in your portfolio has not been getting it done. Cisco is was one of the worst charts. Now here we can think of the chart of Honeywell. If you flip that over, it looks kind of like the chart of Cisco for the last 3 or 4 months or so, right? Gap down in August, never really look back, continues to make a pattern of lower highs, lower lows. This most recent rally, while certainly impressive, especially Monday's gap higher, and it's back above its 50-day moving average for the first time since August. That's all pretty impressive, but it still hasn't eclipsed the previous swing high. And you can see the relative strength overall has been pretty low. The other one I would say from the bottom, I think was Intel. Yep. So now we can look at the chart of Intel. And again, you can see why this is one of the worst ranked trends out of all of them. You see a series of gaps lower around earnings. You can see the most recent move up to the 200-day was repelled, and then another gap to new swing lows. We've now made a lower low. We've now made a lower high, and we're rotating back down. And the relative strength has really just been meager since the March market low. It's just been underperforming. So, you know, again, the what you need to remember about the Scooter ranking, it is not, you know, necessarily predictive. The point of it isn't to tell you what stocks are most likely to gain. It is by definition telling you what has been working. It's telling you what has had the strongest trends up until this moment. But again, the idea of trend following is to lean into those stocks like Honeywell that are working, to lean away from stocks like Intel that have not been working, and making sure overall that you're in the stronger names. When things start to rotate lower and their Scooter ranking goes down, that's when you start thinking of when to reevaluate it. Now, you'll note as we go through these charts, you can see it says SCTR and then large in parentheses. So, you know, the idea of this is that you're actually, you're separating them by universe, because if we mixed all of the equities together, a lot of times all small cap names would rotate to the top, or all of them would rotate to the bottom. And a lot of times it's just a question of small versus large. It's less about the individual stocks. What we do is we break it down by universe. So if you look at Plug Power, which is a hydrogen name, it's in the mid cap space. You can see right now it's the strongest ranked scooter stock or scooter ranking out of the entire mid cap space. And that's why it uses an example. So you can see again, a pattern of higher highs, higher lows. You can see the relative strength has gone higher and has continued to break to a new 12-month relative high, this week. What's interesting is with a stock like this, it's not just today that it's the strong. I mean, you might think, well, hold on a second. Is that just because it's it's been a great trend? That's great, but we missed it, right? Look how it's already up at 24 and it was down at $4 a share, 6 months ago. Here's the thing though. We can actually add, I'm going to switch one of these and actually add the scooter line as one of my indicators, what I'm going to show here. So this is actually showing you the scooter ranking of Plug Power going back over time. So you can see that starting really in sort of mid to late June, this came up and was in the top 10%. This is the 90% line right here. You can see it went back up of 90% here in June. This is when it just broke to new high. So it became one of the top 10% stocks then. It very quickly became the strongest name in the entire mid-cap space here in early June. So, you know, it starts being ranked pretty strong as it's breaking to new highs. And as I mentioned earlier, the point of trend following, the point of momentum investing is to look for stocks that are able to break out of bases, able to improve their trend characteristics with the idea that the strong trends are going to continue. You know, when I'm looking at a chart like Plug, I get questions about RSI and it says, well, it's overbought. Doesn't that mean that we've missed it, right? It's gone too far too quick. And, you know, so again, I would say this. A couple ways you can use something like RSI relative to the trend following approach that we're talking about. You know, number one is focus on the short-term fluctuation. So given this long-term trend, when it has been outperforming, when the chart has been very good, you can see that there are obviously peaks and valleys. Think of this as the orange line, that I drew on the earlier slide, that your ideal cycle. And then these fits and starts, the uptrends and downtrends within that longer term uptrend are sort of the shorter term line, the blue one or whatever that was sort of flicking up and below that idealized cycle. So a trend is made up of shorter term uptrends and downtrends. So if you look at the RSI, when it becomes overbought, those are the peaks within that uptrend. It's the upper end of this channel. When the RSI is down around 40 to 50, that's sort of the, buyable points. Those are the buyable pullbacks within that uptrend. So is today necessarily the best day to get into it? You know, maybe not, because it's gone really, really high. It's in the upper end of that channel. But what it does tell you is to look for opportunistic, reversals, pullbacks where you could potentially get in at a buyable level and look at, where it's been able to pull back at some buyable points. The reason why I just went down that a rabbit hole of sorts to illustrate, talk through this particular example was to encourage you to think about this in terms of scanning as well. So we have a scanning engine built into StockCharts, and I apologize, I'm skipping a lot of the methodology of how you actually use this. If you want to learn how to do this and you use StockCharts.com, go to our Chart School pages. We have videos of a number of experts showing how to design scans and how to build charts like we've been doing. You're welcome to do it. And if there's any particular chart that you see me using that you'd like, I'm happy to send you the actual chart over right to your StockCharts login. I'll put my email up at the end and just shoot me an email with whatever chart you're looking at. Just explain which one it was, and I'm happy to send it to you. But this is a scan that I've designed saying, look at basically U.S. equities with a minimal volume requirement and a scooter ranking above 80, meaning it's in the top 20% of trends, and an RSI below 50. So you think about Plug, when it had that nice run and then it pulled back a little bit, the RSI went just below 50 and then ended up being the pullback within a longer term uptrend. That's kind of what I'm trying to get at here. I ran this about an hour ago, and this was the list that I came up with. I've sorted just with the ETFs at the top, and then I'm going through by sector. So I have it, and it's mixed of different cap ranges. So I have some small cap stocks, some mid caps, some large caps. This is just an example screen, but I'd encourage you to, you know, again, design your own screen, see what ideas you can come up with. But what's interesting, something like home construction comes up as one of the items. If we look at the ITB, which is one of the home construction ETFs, you can see why this is pretty good. It's 80th percentile of the ETF scooter ranking. So it's had a pretty good run, but you can see it's pulled back a little bit, right? So the RSI sort of, right at 50, is coming off a level just below 50. You can see that the long-term trend has still been positive. It's still been outperforming, but it's pulled back a little bit, right? So you're buying in at a weaker point along a run higher. So on a chart like this, I think you lean back into classic support and resistance. 52 is such a solid support level here. Found support there in September. Once again, retested that in late October and just on Monday after the pullback there. So overall, I think that defines your downside risk. That's a reasonable stop point. And then you assume that the long-term trend may continue. That's how you may be able to combine these things. Again, looking for a strong scooter ranking, but it's pulled back a little bit. And we can look at some other ones. At Home Group is another one that might be interesting. Let's look here. So again, similar to the chart of home builders, you can see that the stock has been in a pretty good run. You see the relative strength has been very strong, but it's pulled back in the last month. That's why the RSI is below 50. You can see it's pulled back. It's arguably right at support. I would say this is less ideal than the ITB, which was really still testing support. This one's right at that level. But if you're okay with buying, relative weakness, that could be an interesting time, or you look for a trigger when it breaks above trend line resistance. So again, I think the benefit of the scooter rankings and using something like RSI along with it is to scan for particular charts and then bring up the charts and actually analyze them. And so what I would do from here is start to look at trend lines, look for particular triggers that might, you know, suggest to me that there's a good opportunity. Maybe a Fibonacci retracement. Again, I haven't looked at this, so I'm just, taking a shot at different things that I might want to pay attention to. Here's a Fibonacci analysis starting with the March low, taking it to the peak that we saw here. I can see it's retraced just around 50% of that move. So maybe, you know, I wait for a further breakdown to see if it gets down to 10, which would be the 200 day, which would be the 61.8% level. Now, those are all the things that I may want to think about looking at a particular chart to see how it lines up with the long-term trend characteristics. So this was just a quick taste of the scooter rankings. And again, the idea of, I would say, with if nothing else, I think where I found this incredibly helpful is to take a list, take your portfolio. I'd encourage you to put your portfolio into a chart list on stock charts and sort it based on the scooter rankings and just see which of the names that you're holding are scoring very well. And most importantly, which are not. And if you own anything in that bottom 20% of trends, you better really be comfortable with why you're owning a chart like Intel, which is so relatively weak compared to pretty much anything else we could be looking at, right? What is it that justifies you continuing to hold that? At what point do you cut your losses or agree to change positions? Stocks that are ranked very highly, that's perfect. With a chart like Honeywell, bring that up. And now, as we mentioned with the flight example, think about downside risk potential. Draw the line in the sand on the chart. Where would you agree that that uptrend is no longer in place, and where do you want to revisit that? Where can you pump up a trailing stop as the price continues to go higher? If you didn't follow what I was talking about, or you wanted to learn more about the scooter rankings and what to do on stock charts, there's a little magnifying glass in the upper right corner. If you go in there and type SCTR, you're going to get a bunch of different things, but I would look for Chart School articles and you'll see an explanation about the stock charts technical ranking. We'll give you the formula. We'll show you how it's created. We'll show some examples about how to use it. And as I mentioned, I think it's a great way to sort a list of tickers. It's a great way to focus on what's working and what isn't, with things like industry groups or ETFs. It's a fantastic way of looking at your portfolio in the form form of trend characteristics and identifying what are the strongest trends and what are the weakest trends, and make sure that you're identifying the right opportunities across that opportunity set. I just want to finish off very quickly. You're here at the end of the time, but I just want to finish with a quick just market update on where I'm seeing things. And I don't think I mentioned it before. I host the Closing Bell Show on Stock Charts TV. So it's every weekday, 6 p.m. Eastern. Go to stockcharts.com/TV and you can see my show called The Final Bar. So if you're interested in this type of analysis, I'll give it to you every weekday after the close, sort of a debrief on the technical trends of the day. And what I'm seeing right now, to be honest, overall is we're range bound. And as much as the market is at or near new highs, which is totally fair, as much as there are individual stocks which are breaking out, we looked at Plug earlier, which has been a strong performer. You look at others that have had strong runs. That's absolutely the case. But having said that, I think we've still demonstrated our inability to get above S&P 3600. And I think overall, there are plenty of headwinds. Again, thinking non-technical for a moment, I think there are plenty of potential headwinds just as there are potential tailwinds. And I think there's such a mixed bag of things. I could see that being a very range-bound market for an extended period of time, probably longer than we would want. Having said that, when you have a range, the idea is it's basically twofold. Number one, you expect resistance at the upper end, which is where we're at right now, sort of this green shaded area, which is the peak from September, the retests in October. So I think until proven otherwise, I'm expecting that to hold as resistance. Same thing on the bottom side. If we've pulled back, I think back here in September, we keyed in on this level from June, which also lined up with the July lows. That lined up beautifully with the September low and just happened to line up really well with the late October pullback as well. So if and when we would sell off, I think that's a reasonable place to expect price support, and I would expect that to hold. At some point, though, one of these is gonna fail, and either buying power will overwhelm negativity or caution, and prices will go to new highs. At which point, I'll be the first to say I think we can go materially higher from here. Or we break to new lows, and the selling pressure overwhelms the demand for stocks, and price will go to new swing lows. At which point, I'll be the first to say I think we have a risk of going much further down. But what's happened for the last 2 months is we've been absolutely range bound. Having said that, I don't think that means there's no opportunity. And if you look at charts like Plug, like Honeywell, like FedEx, there are plenty of stocks that are working just fine. Semiconductors that have been in strong price trends, strong relative trends. There are plenty of stocks like Intel that have not been working. And I think there can be stocks going up and stocks going down, and that can net out to a market that's still chopping around, that's relatively volatile, but with no real strong directional sense. Until we break out meaningfully in one way or the other, I think that's how I would tend to think of things. I would say when I'm looking at opportunities across the equity landscape, for me, technology has been a strong performer. And I think there are pockets of technology that certainly could continue to do well. But when I'm thinking about going into next year, things like industrials, materials, spaces, if this uptrend is going to continue to mature and go on into and go higher into 2021, those are the stocks, those are the reopening of the economy names, those are the investing in infrastructure spaces. And what's interesting is if you look at the chart like we did a little bit ago, if you look at the chart of materials or the chart of industrials in particular, you can see that the trends overall have been pretty good. Industrials, the XLI is actually broke above its February peak. And potentially if that continues, that's a strong price performer, but also relative strength that's been improving. And so overall, my goal is to be in things that are performing better than their peers and be out of things that are performing worse than their peers. I hope this was an interesting walk through the stock charts technical rating system. And again, more broadly speaking, thinking about momentum investing and how to pay attention to it and focusing again. I think the three goals of what you're trying to do is number one, identify trends. Number two, follow the trends. Number three, anticipate when the trends are reversing. And I was going to say one other market overview comment I meant to mention. I think breadth characteristics are what are really, really important right now. And if you look at the cumulative advanced decline lines, I think seeing those continue to improve would be really important. We haven't quite seen them break out just yet. You have on the S&P, but not on mid caps and small caps. And that's where I'd be looking for some sort of confirmation. Also, I think about 85%, 84% of the S&P 500 stocks are above their 200-day moving average. That's actually extremely high. The last time we were that high was January of 2020, just before the market peaked. Before that, in the last move higher and before a much further drop in stock. So, by some measures, we're overextended. By others, you just haven't had the broad participation to justify further upside. But again, I will follow the trends with everyone. If this sort of thinking is of interest to you, and as you could probably tell from how I tend to talk through it, my goal is to empower investors to make better decisions. And I love trying to dispel myths about investing and to focus on an actionable, reasonable toolkit that investors can use to make sense of the world around them using the benefits of technical analysis and using really the power of decision-making, behavioral finance, and thinking about how you think as an investor. If you go to my website, marketmisbehavior.com, there's a link at the top for a free course on behavioral investing. It's a 5-week course we'll do over email, has a video every week and some exercises. I encourage you to go through that. And the feedback I've gotten has been, in some ways, it's so funny when I've worked with coaching clients, some of our first conversations are they pretty much own up to all the things they probably already know. They just need someone like me to nudge them and point out something that they probably could admit to themselves if they took the time to do it. I'm just going to encourage you to have an honest conversation with yourself and focus on where there could be some opportunities to upgrade your procedures. So check out my website, marketmisbehavior.com, and go for the free course at the top. And hopefully it helps you think about how you think. Also, as I mentioned earlier, I host the daily Closing Bell show on Stock Charts TV called The Final Bar. It runs every weekday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Go to stockcharts.com/TV. And I'd love to see you checking out our channel there. And if you can read the tickers on the final group of stocks, you can get my last message, which is thank you. Appreciate Dave and Anka setting up the event. Appreciate you including me. And for everyone, you see my email at the bottom. If you have any questions on what I've shown here, just shoot me an email. I'm happy to answer them for you.